along the side of the building, and I think of Lien and all the other girls sleeping soundly in there. I tuck a broken tile against my palm. I know what I must do next. Chapter 12. I drop from the roof with a yell, tumbling feet first into the chest of the person below, sending them sprawling. I land half on top of them and roll off, knowing I have to get the attention of the nearby patrols. I stumble to my feet, but then a hand grabs my shoulder, yanking me back. I fall heavily onto the hard stones. They jump on top of me, hand over my mouth, knee against my stomach, looking down at me in the faint light of the moon. My heart stutters. Bo? What is he doing here? And suddenly the recognition flares in his eyes too. There's a shout in the distance and he quickly pulls me to my feet. We shuffle backward into the trees. We're pressed close enough that I can feel him breathing as we watch the door to the courtyard creak open and a guard poke his head in, torch in hand. I'm aware, too aware, of the warmth of him beside me. The tautness of the muscles in his arm, trembling under my hand. The tension held in the long line of his body, ready to react if the guard discovers us. The door eases shut and we let out a collective sigh. It's then that I remember he shouldn't be here and I shouldn't be assisting him. I throw myself away from him, pressing my back against the solidity of the wall. We regard each other warily. I press my hands into my arms, feeling the aches of bruises I know are blooming from my rough landing. A sudden wind picks up, spinning around my body and rustling his hair, leaving me hollow and cold. I remember all his lies, his fake name, his fake identity, the way he wore his hair as if he was someone not used to the fashions of his city, how he appeared on the dais, how he handled the sword, his training apparent. This boy is more than he seems. Not the slightly clumsy, eager-to-please boy I met in the market, who spoke about his family and growing up in the capital. This boy, crouching on the ground in the dark, is a weapon. What are you doing here? I stand, wielding my words like a blade, jabbing at him in self-defense. It's a feeling I'm used to, knowing that if I'm prickly, no one will approach me. I won't have to listen to criticisms about my dirty nails, my mended clothes. He stands as well and opens his hands to show me he's unarmed. I wanted to see you. Why? What could you possibly want with me? Anger is good. Anger is safe. I choke down my confusion until it remains only as a tremor in my leg, tapping a frantic beat on the ground. To apologize. He steps forward and I move away. Why would the cousin to the princess, son of a prince, need to apologize to me? I snap. You made a fool of me. Pretended you were just a resident of the capital. Pretended to be kind when it was all a lie. Yes, I suppose I did, but... He gives me a wry smile. So did you. Only about a name. I've learned a name can be everything. The corner of his mouth lifts as he continues, a mocking lilt to his voice. Kong, son of the banished prince, nephew to the emperor, carrier of the family legacy. Betrayer of the throne, capable of killing without a single thought, able to bend darkness to his will. Not funny, I growl. It grates at me that he doesn't know what is at stake, that he has no idea what he disrupted. He holds up a hand. Yes, I'm sorry. I've been told I like to make light of things, especially when they bother me. He gestures to the front steps of the residence. Please, can we sit? Can we talk? I keep an eye on him, wary of any sudden movements, as I perch myself on the edge of the step. He sits down beside me, more serious now, and clears his throat. He interrupts himself with a sigh before starting again. You reminded me of my life before I left the capital. He stares down at the ground, fingers making meaningless patterns of swirls and loops on the stone. I wanted to pretend I was a student in the city, not bound by my family history. I was just a boy who met a girl in the market one spring afternoon and wanted to spend time with her. For a moment, I warmed to the sadness in his voice, and I can almost believe him. But then I remember the flash of his sword in the firelight. You swooped down from the rooftops. I'm speaking to him, but I'm also reminding myself. You were captured by the guards, interrogated and locked away. Now you're in front of me again. How am I to believe you have no supernatural origins or no evil intent? He glances at me, amusement evident.
Nothing that exciting, I'm afraid. My father still has friends in the palace. The officials have long memories, and 10 years is nothing to them. They've arranged for me to stay in the residence of Winter's Dreaming under heavy guard. I slipped out during the shift change, but they will be looking for me soon.
Soon. The word hangs between us like a sigh. Why don't you leave the palace? I blurt suddenly. You can escape. Go back home to your father. He frowns.
It's not that simple.
I came here for a reason, a purpose I have to see fulfilled. I wait for him to elaborate, but he remains quiet. We sit there in silence, each of us brooding over our own thoughts until he speaks again. But I needed to find you. My gaze flicks over to him. He's watching me, his dark eyes catching the light.
Explain myself? Make amends? To ensure I do not leave you with a poor memory of me if I'm to be executed by the end of the week? I look at him with horror, and he reaches for me as if to offer some reassurance, but looks crestfallen when I shrink back. She has no plans to execute me that I know of. Although I'm sure a few of her advisors would love to pin some nefarious deed to my name. I stare at him, trying to see him fully this time. Even though he may still be lying at this very moment, I know what the golden key revealed. I know for a moment we glimpsed each other's deepest, darkest truths. The brand over his heart. The tea that I poured for my mother. The things that irreparably changed us. In my cell, I kept on thinking of our afternoon together, he says softly. It's been a long time since I've had even an hour like that. No expectations, without worry. It meant a lot to me. He meets my eyes, earnest again, vulnerable. Something still hums between us, a dangerous kind of connection. I'm not sure how to prove it to you, he continues, that I'm still the boy from the market, that everything I said was true. I grew up near the palace. My father is a soldier.
I wouldn't call the general of Kailang a common soldier, I chuckle, despite myself.
Discussions about the general had continued in the kitchens, even after Small Wu's warnings. A reminder of the history of Daxi. The general carving a bloody arc through the kingdom, consolidating the power of the emperor. The rumors that the general was not content with the tiger seal. He wanted more. More power, more soldiers, more wealth, until he coveted even the dragon throne.
To everyone, he was the general, but he is still my father. The one who took me into his household when I was a baby. He shrugs, lips drawing into a thin line. I don't want to talk about my father.
I open my mouth to speak, to ask more questions, about how he came to be the adopted son of the banished prince. But the voice of the crier pierces the night, announcing the hour. He's on his feet before I can blink, alert and ready. It reminds me again that he is more than he claims to be. A threat.
Tomorrow?
He looks down at me. A question in his voice, but a promise in his eyes. I hope you will give me your name. Footsteps approach. The patrols must be making their way back. He's still waiting for his answer. It's a risk I can't afford to take. I'm in enough trouble as it is. But I also need to see him again. I nod. The quick flash of his smile in the night is lightning against a dark sky. And then he's gone before I can even take another breath, vanishing back over the rooftops. For this one night, in the city inside a city, I find myself feeling a little less alone. Chapter 13. The next morning brings winds from the east and rain dripping from the rafters. Tiern is the one who delivers her breakfast, contained in a round pot, while Mingwen holds an umbrella over their heads. She grumbles about the bad weather, balancing a basket tucked under her arm. Tiern dances around the table while helping Mingwen, gleefully explaining each item they're pulling out when he realizes I'm unfamiliar with these northern dishes. Hot soy milk is ladled into bowls, tiny shrimp sprinkled over the surface, then drizzled with soy sauce, vinegar, and red chili oil, and finally dotted with a handful of chives. Another plate is piled high with fried golden dough, meant for dipping. Lian invites them both to sit down and eat with us, which causes the two other Shen Nongtu in the room to give us odd looks and take their food elsewhere. It's clear from our brief encounters with the other competitors that they believe our mannerisms to be peculiar, particularly our lack of a respectable background and our habit of associating with the servants. Mingwen's mouth tightens at the obvious snub and she turns to leave, but Tiern convinces her to stay by pushing a stool in her direction. "I suppose I can rest my feet for a moment," she mutters, accepting one of the steaming bowls and inhaling the scent rising from the top. Tiern already has his mouth full of the crispy dough, nodding with pleasure as he swirls his spoon into the soup. I do the same and take a tentative slurp. It is rich, savory, salty, and sour. The heat then creeps up as a pleasant burn at the back of my throat, confusing my senses. The table is quiet for a few moments, but for the slurping and munching as we enjoy our meal. After he makes quick work of his food, Tiern pushes his dish away, declaring himself full, and looks at Lian slyly. "I heard them talking about the two of you in the kitchens after you left last night." "Tiern!" Mingwen scolds. Lian leans toward him, and even I set my spoon down for a moment with interest. "Wait, he can tell us," Lian smiles. "What did they say?"
"They said the Shen Nongshi can give people the strength of 10 men. Is this true?"
I can tell this boy is trouble, but of the sort where he knows he is more likely to get his hair ruffled than to be beaten for having a smart mouth. A different sort of reality compared to that boy in the market. "My teacher is able to brew tonics that can make you stronger for a period of time," Lian tells him. "He can pull out the inner potential placed inside you by the old gods, but not all Shen Nongshi have that capability. Just like some of your uncles demonstrate greater skill at folding dumplings, and others have a knack for cooking with the wok, the Shen Nongshi have specializations too. Some Shen Nongshi have healing powers," I add. "They look inside you to see what sickness there is and help to draw it out. I almost say mother, even though those in the capital may not yet know she is dead. My teacher always taught me Shen Nong chooses each of us for a reason," I mumble, knowing I need to be more careful of my words next time. I pretend to sip at my soy milk so that someone else can speak. Mingwen nods. "They brew powerful magic. I saw it for myself once when a cup of tea drew the age out of a person's face. Made him look 10 years younger." She then clears her throat as if embarrassed to be part of the conversation. I wonder what sort of recognition my mother would have received if she had remained at the palace and practiced her art here. In our village, she was sometimes mistaken for father's assistant, or turned away from patients due to their preference for a properly trained physician. I know it always hurt her, even though she never stated it out loud.
"Why can't you make everyone strong and young?"
Tiern blurts out with excitement.
"Wouldn't that solve all our problems? Wouldn't that he be the most powerful kingdom in all the world? We'd have soldiers who could destroy everything in their path."
"Good question," Lian claps him on the back. "The magic is temporary. It takes something out of the Shen Nongshi to use it, Once my teacher needed to send an urgent message across Daxi. The messenger traveled for 3 days and three nights without rest. But in turn, my teacher was unable to leave his bed for almost a week. We do not have enough Shennongshi in the kingdom specializing in this particular type of magic to keep all our soldiers going for so long. The more you ask of the magic, I say, the more it takes, either from the one who casts or the one who receives. What else do they say about us? Lian asks, still amused.
That the Shennongshi deal in secrets, Mingwen says, her interest outpacing her suspicion. Many of you don't accept payment in coin, only in truths. They say you will require payment years later because of the poison you put in the tea. It may seize you in the middle of the night and kill you.
Qing rambles on before looking at us with worry.
Is it true? You don't seem like murderers.
Lian and I can't help ourselves. I double over, scarcely able to breathe, while Lian laughs so hard she has to wipe tears from her eyes. Tian looks at the spectacle of us, bewildered, while Mingwen huffs beside him.
What sort of demons do you think we are?
I can't help but sputter through my mirth. Mingwen stands, scowling again.
Forget it, she snaps.
Lian gets to her feet too and helps her gather our used bowls and utensils. We're happy to answer any of your questions. I used to believe so many rumors, but I would have never known what is true and what is a lie until I started my apprenticeship. Mingwen nods after considering this, slightly appeased.
I suppose you're not all bad.
With the four of us, it takes no time at all before everything is packed away. As Mingwen secures the lid onto the top of the basket, she pauses.
I probably shouldn't tell you this, she says, glancing at the door to make sure no one else is listening before looking back at me. The steward knows you are the one who took the snacks to the marquee. She will be coming to find you soon.
With that cryptic warning, she hurries outside before I have a chance to ask her any questions.
Oh no,
Lian says to me, eyes wide as saucers. I would make myself scarce if I were you.
Grandmother!
Tian exclaims. Before Lian and I can even move to save ourselves, Steward Yang strolls in through the open doors. Dressed in a dark gray robe with a black sash, not a hair out of place, Steward Yang examines the room. Although she is not a particularly tall woman, her presence is commanding. She makes me want to stand up straighter and check my collar to make sure my appearance is as it should be.
You!
She catches sight of me and stalks over, grabbing my arm. I am rooted in place, not knowing where to turn or where to flee. Lian is no help. She looks as petrified as I am.
Laughing, the two of you? Think it's all a joke? Pretending to be someone else for a day?
Steward Young's voice starts out deceptively low, but increases in volume quickly, until her words come out as a yell.
Conspiring to make a fool out of me? Make a fool out of my department?
Her nails dig into the soft skin of my arm, making me wince.
Competitors are to remain to themselves, not cavort with court officials, not play with costumes. And you...
With her other arm, Steward Yang points an accusing finger at Lian, who puts the table between us as if it would be enough to save her.
I recognize you. I remember you from when you were young, always getting into trouble, always underfoot. I was too soft on you, thinking you a child. I had hoped that the esteemed Lu would have taught you manners. But now I discover the two of you are sneaking around my kitchens. I'm sure Minister Song would love to hear how competitors like you are pretending to be maids, traipsing around the palace, making a mockery of the competition. He would love to hear what sort of trouble you've gotten yourself into.
Fear gives way to annoyance, then to anger. It brings forth the same feeling of choking helplessness I had standing before the marquee and those red-faced, drunken fools who can break the rules without a care. They do not have their reputations and their futures at stake in this competition.
Their fortunes are aligned, their futures secure. They will go on to receive the training they need to enter the trials regardless of the outcome. And as for me, I will lose my sister like I have already lost my mother. I snatch my arm out of her grasp and snarl at her. Some of the other competitors are enjoying private audiences with the Marquis himself. How is that fair? I know many of the kitchen staff have been to his residence, so you must have known about these transgressions. Why did you not inform the minister immediately? Steward Young blanches at the mention of the Marquis.
How do you know that? She demands. What did you see?
I realize she must have believed I only passed the dishes to the servants of the household. She didn't know I saw who the Marquis was entertaining within his private chambers. Lien pounces to my rescue.
Beloved Auntie Young,
she links her arm with the older woman, laying on her charm.
We have tried to be helpful, to keep our hands from lying idle, but we failed you in our attempts. You are right. You should indeed inform the minister of all we have seen. Tell him you are the one who provided us with the wisdom and courage to do the right thing.
Steward Young now looks like a rabbit in a trap, brushing Lien off and shaking her head.
No. I realize now. There is no need for that, I assure you.
But you taught us such an important lesson,
Lien exclaims with exaggerated sincerity.
We have no choice but to follow.
Oh, stop it, foolish girl,
Steward Young snaps. She closes her eyes and takes a breath, massaging one temple with her fingers.
The longer I remain in the palace, the more it drains the life out of me.
Come sit, Auntie,
Lien says, gentler now, leading her to a stool. I catch a whiff of something when she walks past me. The distinct odor of the bark from the Chenxiang tree and the sharp sweetness of dry tangerine peel. Medicinal smells that were often found in my father's workshop. Peering closer, I can see the sallow tinge of her skin and the purple shadows under her eyes. This woman is ill, and from the look of the lines pulled taut around her mouth, she's also in pain.
Are you feeling quite all right, grandmother?
Tiern was hovering at the door during our argument, but he now presses closer, tucking himself under her arm.
Yes, don't worry about me, Tingting,
she sighs. It's only a headache that won't go away. Even though she came in here accusing us of deception, I feel nothing but pity for her at this moment. Father's teachings continue to hold fast in my heart. I cannot stand by while someone is suffering.
Can I pour you a cup of tea? I ask. It might help.
She's already turning away, muttering about other tasks to attend to, but Tiern starts to massage her shoulders helpfully.
You always talk about how it's unfair that the Shennongshi serve the courtly folk, he says. But now this is our chance. We can finally see the magic for ourselves, like the tea houses along the river with the music and the pretty ladies.
Color blooms on Steward Young's pinched face, as if she's embarrassed by the young boy's innocent words. Lien encourages her with a smile. Ning's father is a physician. She might be able to help. Steward Young looks at Lien, then to me.
Go, go,
Tiern chirps,
before she changes her mind.
I head to the cabinet against the wall, where our ingredients are stored. The tea leaves we have in our room are a common loose leaf variety, but are still higher quality than anything we could ever purchase back in the village. And I have some remnants of the osmanthus flowers from my disastrous encounter in the first round of the competition, the tea the judges never tasted. Displayed in the cabinet are also several tea sets. I pick one that is the color of cream with a brush of blue along the edge, but my eyes also linger on the others, cool white with a hint of green or crackled gray. Back home, my uncle is a merchant who travels the region to sell both tea and pottery from our village. In his study, there is a shelf containing various tea wares he's collected throughout his travels, and he loves to show off his treasures. How one was bestowed by this high official or gifted by that famous ship's captain. I was never permitted to touch them, only to admire them from a distance. But here, even the servants are permitted to use such lovely wares,
It does not take long for the water to boil in the earthen pot. The leaves steep, then I pour the tea into a cup, followed by two tiny osmanthus blooms. They float to the surface of the tea, caressed by bubbles. Although my mother's favorite flower was the pomelo, it only bloomed in spring for a brief time. In the summer, she preferred the osmanthus, which carries a sweet fragrance. In autumn, the scent of the flower turns, and it is harvested for wine instead. In one of Mother's stories, the first osmanthus tree grew so tall and abundant, it once overshadowed the moon itself. The Sky Emperor, enraged, punished the negligent immortal responsible for pruning the heavenly forest. He was tethered to it forever, living out his eternal life no more than 10 steps away from the great tree. On nights when the moon is cast in shadow, it is because the woodcutter has fallen asleep again. Steward Young picks up the cup and inhales. "It smells like peaches," she says, surprised. Even though Tiang still wants to chatter away, Lian takes him away to the side of the room to show him something, understanding that I require concentration to practice my art. My mother used her Shennongshu skills to coax the truth out of the soul, the problems that worried at the edges of the mind. Like the shadows of the moon, the pruning of branches from a tree. I asked it to reveal the hidden memories of the judges in the competition, and now I want to unveil the cause of the steward's pain. "Let the tea flow through you and bring you comfort," I whisper. She drinks and I close my eyes, ready to communicate, ready to receive. A sharp pain quickly pricks the middle of my forehead like the point of a needle. Then it snaps outward, fracturing from the center. I hiss from the sharpness of it, then the pain funnels into my mouth, causing a bitterness that spreads from my tongue to my throat. "What's happening?" I hear her voice, dimly, from a distance. I force myself to inhale, breathe through it. Was this what my mother felt when she opened herself up? Did she take the pain of others into herself? An image spreads in my mind, expanding like watercolor on paper. I am both inside and outside of myself. I can feel the firm surface of the table underneath my arm, but I am also somewhere else, floating above us, watching the steward looking at me. I wish once again that Mother was here to show me, to teach me. Did people watch her with luminous eyes, expectant and afraid? The pain isn't only in my head. It extends like roots, tendrils worming their way through my body, her body. Vines choke my heart, squeezing my organs until it is difficult to breathe. It's the worry that is undoing her. The anxiety eating away a hollow in her belly, the thoughts keeping her up late at night. With a gasp, my eyes snap open. "Tiang!" I call out, and the boy is quick to appear at my side. "Go to the storeroom and fetch a few pieces of dangui and 5 handfuls of dried huang tea. Try to pick the thinnest strands you can find." He nods and runs through the door. Steward Young sets down her cup. "Why? What did you see?" Without the rest she needs, her body will only grow weaker. Dryness in the mouth, affecting the way things taste, loss of strength in her limbs, difficulty catching her breath, and eventually far graver effects. "I think there's something you are terribly worried about." I try to untangle the symptoms from the cause, the phantom ache in my head still ringing. "No, not something. Someone. Someone close to you, as close to you as a part of your body. It's keeping you up at night." "Like carving out my organs," she whispers. Mother used to call us her dear ones, her xingan baobei. Her heart and her organs, an irreplaceable part of her. Shu and I would laugh at her exaggerated affection, but we loved her attention. It finally dawns on me. I should have seen it sooner. "Your daughter," she nods. "Chunhua was picked to be the emperor's handmaiden. I was so proud. She's clever. Even the emperor himself praised her once. She was happy with her position until the illness came last winter. All the servants of the Emperor's personal residences have been shut into the inner court. No one in, no one out. I have not seen her for 2 seasons. She trembles and Lian places a comforting hand on her shoulder.
We've all heard about the Emperor's illness, Lian says. The news has already reached the border towns.
Yes, you would know, wouldn't you? The ambassador's daughter.
Seward Young sniffles, but her tone is now resigned. There have been
rumors as well. Rumors that the Emperor himself has been poisoned by the shadow, that he is permanently bedridden, which is why he has not shown his face in months.
The thought is troubling, but it would explain the lack of his presence. The Emperor must need to eat, I say. Can't you get a message to your daughter somehow through the kitchen deliveries?
The steward shakes her head. The inner palace has its own kitchen. When we deliver our goods, we leave them in the courtyard. The staff pick up what they need, then we return to collect the rest. I've tried before to supervise the delivery, but they speak through the gate and ask us to leave. The physicians say it is for our own protection, but I fear the worst. Tiering runs in with the requested ingredients in hand, disrupting the somber atmosphere. I pour the ingredients into an earthen pot that can withstand the heat of coals, just like the pot that held our breakfast earlier. I pour the hot water over the dried herbs and allow the water to settle. The medicinal musk wafts into the air, tingling my nose. I always thought it was my father who wanted to help everyone in the village, even if it put the family at risk and attracted the attention of the governor. I never understood why. I resented our threadbare clothes, how some days mother had to stretch a handful of rice into congee. I wondered why mother always helped him without question. But now I can see why. If you can feel someone else's suffering, how can you look away? I convince myself it's only the steam making my eyes water. The steward suddenly grabs my hand, insistent. I heard the Shenongshi can send messages across distances, that you can whisper a word into the night and it will find the target. Can you do that for me? Can you send a message to my daughter? I shake my head. I wish I could. I don't know how to send messages through walls or speak to someone in dreams. It may be something a truly powerful Shenongshi is able to do, but I have never learned it. Steward Young pulls back, folding her arms over her chest. Sometimes I wish I were the shadow, able to step through walls and hide in the darkness. I always thought the palace was a refuge from the harsh reality of life, but now I know it is a prison. I stir the tonic in the pot with a wooden spoon, ensuring that it remains at a simmer and not a boil. The thought of the Emperor shut in his grand palace leaves me feeling unsettled, and I remember what the esteemed Tian hinted at. Change is coming. When the tonic is done, I strain it using one of the resting pots, then pour it into a bowl. The color of the liquid has darkened considerably into an unappealing brown. I bring it over to the steward, setting it in front of her. You have to sleep, I tell her. Without sleep, you cannot be ready if she needs you. How can you take care of your heart if your mind is slow? She grumbles at the lecture but places her hands around the bowl. Look at me, listening to a mere child. I'm getting muddled in my old age.
Grandmother, Tiering hugs her from behind, sweet as malt sugar. You are still young.
Steward Young smiles at that and lowers her head to blow on the surface of the tonic.
Wait.
I jump up and return to my room to fetch a small bundle from my dressing table. This will make it easier to drink if you like. Yesterday, while in the kitchens, I picked up a few pieces of pear syrup candy from the servant's tray. They are one of the few luxuries from Jia my mother splurged on, the one thing guaranteed to make her light up when we received a delivery. She could pop them into her mouth directly, but they were so sweet they made my teeth ache, so she would always put them into a pot of hot water for me to drink. Steward Young regards me with an odd, contemplative look. You can put it under your tongue, I tell her, thinking it is not common practice in the capital. It should ease the bitterness of the tonic. She ignores the offered candy but follows my other instructions, sipping at the bowl slowly until all of it is gone. You see, Tian? She shows the empty bowl to her grandson. Grandmother drank all her medicine. He beams at her, adoration for her evident.
Well done!
Steward Yang picks up my handkerchief from the table and examines the bird stitch on it. I resist the urge to snatch it away. That was Shu's. Now that I have been separated from Mother's Shenongshi box, I have so little remaining of home. Did you make this? She asks. The stitching is quite fine, even with the coarse materials. No, that is my sister's work. I reach out and take it from her, not caring if it's rude to do so, and tuck it away in my sash where I can keep it safe. Lian, could you take Tian outside to play? The steward says. I would like to speak to Ning in private. Lian looks at me, questioning. I give her a small shrug and she takes the young boy's hand, leading him outside. He's already chattering again. The steward turns back to me, but when we're alone, her shrewd expression reappears, as if there is an abacus working in her head, considering my worth and value. You remind me of someone, she says. Lian told me Steward Yang was the tyrant of her kitchens, able to notice even the smallest thing out of place. A single fruit missing from a display, the count of the evening meal being off by two, or the incorrect order of utensils on a tray. Her memory is impeccable, her attention to detail frightening. It is why she commands both respect and fear. With the years passing, my memory isn't quite what it used to be, so it took me a while to recall. But now I can see it. It's in the shape of your eyes and face, the way you speak. She picks up the square of pear candy, holding it up to the light until it glows. It was this, though, that made me remember. My pulse quickens in my throat. Mother never mentioned anyone from the capital. She said very little about it, even when we begged to hear more. I used to know a woman who worked in the palace. She was a midwife who attended to the servants, and she used to make us drink the bitterest brews. She chuckles at the memory, her fondness for this woman evident. They would cause your toes to curl and your stomach to roll. She used to give us all squares of pear candy to make them easier to drink, reminding us to hold it under our tongues. Her eyes meet mine. You're Yi Ting's daughter. The sound of my mother's name rings through the room. She always left an impression. Even now, 17 years later, someone remembers her. I wondered how she fared when she left the palace. There was a scandal. For the first few years, I was certain she would return. She smiles. Yi Ting got out, like she always said she would. She made a life out there with a family of her own. I admire her for it. You do? I have so many questions about what she was like when she was young and why she left the palace. So many questions she brushed off, left forever unanswered. Not many are able to adjust to life outside the capital once they've had a taste of palace finery. They usually come back. Some in mere days, others in a few months. But they always find their way back. Her, though. How is your mother? She's dead, I say without thinking, still overwhelmed by the swell of emotion rising inside me. I slap my hand over my mouth. She is? She reaches out and pats my shoulder. I'm sorry. She has clearly mistaken my shock for sorrow. I cover my face with my hand, allowing her to believe it. How long ago did she pass? She asks softly, and I find myself telling her. About my mother's death, about the poison, about the unfairness of it all. Because this woman used to know my mother. She knew her brilliance and her generosity, the beauty that lit her up from within. and she pretends she does not see me dab at my eyes with my handkerchief, giving me space to grieve.
Chapter 14. I pour Steward Young another cup of tea, and she accepts it when she is assured there's no magic infused in the cup. Can you tell me more about my mother? I ask hesitantly, desperate for the smallest scrap of information.
That's a story for another day, she says. I don't have much time left before I have to return to the kitchens. I should speak to you and Lien about the competition.
When Lien returns with Tian, I have already washed my face and tidied my appearance. I feel like I've been emptied inside, wrung out by tears. Steward Yang gestures for Lien to join us, and I hide my trembling hands under the table.
I heard about what happened the first round, and that your position is uncertain at best.
A rush of embarrassment runs through me. I made a fool of myself in front of not only the judges and the other competitors, but also other citizens of the capital. I have only myself to blame.
It's not her fault the Marquis is an antiquated bag, Lien mumbles.
I can tell Steward Young is trying to be stern, but the corner of her mouth betrays her.
You have eased my headache, she says. Because of your help, because I knew and respected your mother, and because I cannot stand to see the wealthy Shen Nongtu brazenly disregard the rules, I have decided to help you both.
You will? I gasp. Lien claps. We would be so grateful, Auntie.
I know the tea they will be using in the next round, she examines her cup, frowning. But before I tell you its name, I want you to each make me a promise.
Lien and I both wait, expectant.
I don't want either of you in the kitchens again, understand? I have people to take care of. If any of the judges catch you, I can't risk the lives of everyone else.
She waits for both of us to agree before nodding.
The name of the tea is Silver Needle. I will obtain a sample for you if you think it may be useful.
After Steward Young and Tian leave us, Lien and I turn to each other excitedly. Finally, something we can use. A hint to give us a clear focus, instead of the feeling that we are stumbling around in the dark.
What do you know about Silver Needle? I ask.
It's not a name I remember from Mother's teachings.
It sounds familiar. I think I've read about it once.
We return to our room, where Lien rummages through her things before coming up with a book in hand. Sitting cross-legged on the bed, she flips through the pages until she finds the section she is looking for. Silver Needle is known for its thin, slender leaves covered with the lightest layer of silver fuzz, she reads aloud. Many attempts have been made to cultivate it from the wild, though none have been successful, which makes it highly sought after. In the hands of a master Shen Nongshi, it can coax the truth out of anyone, but even a Shen Nongtu would be able to use it to discern a truth from a lie.
A truth serum? I ask. Anyone who drinks it will be forced to tell the truth?
It seems a precious resource to have such an ability.
Lien laughs. If it were as easy as that, do you think it would not be worth more than the golden key?
But the silver needle, like all other tea leaves, depends on the wielder. It depends on the severity of the lie and on how much the other person wants to hide the truth. When Lien and I return from dinner, we find a small package waiting for us on our table. I open it to find a note from Steward Young and a few silvery yellow leaves in a small pouch. We agree to split the amount to prepare for the next round of the competition, hoping it will give us an advantage if we can learn how to wield the tea. We continue to speculate on what will happen tomorrow until it is time to rest. But I find myself lying there, staring into the dark, listening to Lien's breathing as it slows. My mind is unable to rest, thinking of that boy who was able to traverse the palace walls in the dark. The one who promised to return for my real name. Lost in my thoughts, the sound of the gong startles me.
Sangen,
The distant sound of the criers reaches my ears, reminding me of the chant every child learned in school.
Yi geng ren, first hour for the people preparing for rest. Er geng luo, second hour for the gong, watching over those safe in their beds. San geng gui, third hour for the ghosts coming out of the dark. Si geng zai, fourth hour for the thieves taking advantage of night. Wu geng ji, the final hour for the rooster, first to awake. Dawn arrives to welcome the new day. It's the third hour, the hour of the ghost, the darkest time of night, when the spirits are the most active. My feet touch the cold floor. My fingers fumble in the dark until I find my cloak. I wrap it around me before tiptoeing past the screen that separates our room from the foyer, then out the door into the dim courtyard. I remember the other rhyme. The banished prince, demon born, who thrives in the dark.
I wasn't sure you would remember.
Boa steps out from behind the shadow of the willow tree and I jump back, swallowing a startled cry. Kong, I remind myself. His other name. His true name. Sorry. He comes closer until I can see him in the light of the lantern hanging from the rafters, and he raises his hands to show he is unarmed. My hands clutch the front of my cloak as if it is armor that can protect me. Do you want come? We speak over each other, then stop. Kong walks carefully toward me until he is at the foot of the steps, looking up.
This is the first time we've met where you haven't attacked me, he states with a slow grin.
The one that unsettles me, as if he knows something I do not. I find it insufferable. I find him insufferable. And yet, I like to see it.
You've deserved it every time, I retort. That's fair.
His smile stretches even wider, not bothered by my sharpness. Will you finally tell me your name? My name doesn't carry as much weight as his. My family is not renowned, infamous like his. Why does he care so much about my name and about who I am? I must have stared at him for too long. I can feel the chasm between us widen again, and his face grows serious. He turns and sits down on the steps with a sigh. After a pause, I follow, careful to keep an arm's length between us.
I thought you wanted me to come back. He sounds disappointed.
I did. The moment the words leave my mouth, I wish I could take them back. I hurry to explain. I still find it difficult to trust you, however, knowing what I know.
Why? Who do you believe I am? He demands. You still think I'm an assassin?
It's easier to deal with him when he is prickly and defensive, rather than soft and vulnerable.
Tell me, I press. Are you the shadow? Are you the one who poisoned the tea bricks?
I look for any hint of deception, a flicker in the eyes, a certain nervous twitch to confirm my suspicions. But he looks stunned that I would even believe that of him, sputtering for a moment before regaining his ability to speak.
Why would I poison the tea? What do I possibly have to gain?
To create unrest in the empire, I'm repeating back what I've heard in the village, the kitchens, and among the other Shennongtu. To regain the throne for your father. I have seen what people will do for power. I know the extent of the governor's terrible influence within Su. The taxes that grow higher each year for our protection, while the people suspect the bandits we are protected from are his own hired thugs. I expect Kong to react angrily to my accusations, that I would goad him into leaving and never speaking to me again. But he appears thoughtful instead.
We feel the burden in all corners of the empire, he says. That's why I'm here in the capital. I'm here to petition the emperor to help my people. If he will not see me, then a regent must continue to rule if he is ill. While the court continues their political games, the people will slowly starve.
I don't know what to say to that.
How can I convince you I'm telling the truth?
His hand tightens into a fist at his side.
If I cannot even win over a stranger in the market, how could I possibly sway the court? My mouth drops open as it all becomes clear. Is that why you care so much about what I think of you? I'm the practice target for your oratory skills? That if you can convince an uneducated commoner to join your cause, you would be able to convince the scholars and the nobles? That is not... He scowls. That is not what I meant. You're twisting things, purposely misunderstanding me. Even with my pride hurt, I remember what Lian said. If the Shen Nong Tu from the capital are using all the tools at their disposal to win, so too must we rally our strengths. The silver needle can tell the truth from a lie. And what better person to test it on than Kung? Prove it to me, I say, standing. It's my turn to look down at him. Prove to me you are not lying. He looks up at me, already wary. What would you have me do? The next round of the competition is a test of honesty, I tell him, of untangling truths from lies. I need someone to practice on. If you are telling me the truth, then you have nothing to fear. Perhaps he can even reveal something about the court that can help me advance in the competition. He accepts without hesitation, which surprises me. Is he so confident in his ability to deceive a mere Shen Nong Tu, or does he believe in the truthfulness of every word he utters? I mull over these possibilities while restoking the fire inside the residence, using the moment to myself to gather my thoughts. I've never been taught this sort of magic, and the doubt continues to worry at me. You cannot pull the truth from the unwilling, and you cannot tear something out of a mind that is closed off. A give and a take. Will he be willing to tell me the truth? Can I handle whatever secrets he's hiding? I set the teaware on the stone table in the courtyard, stifling a yawn when he is not looking. The weariness is starting to fray my nerves since I already exerted myself with the use of my magic earlier on Steward Young. My portion of the silver needle is only enough for a single cup. I pour the water over the delicate strands. What I've gleaned from my afternoon reviewing books with Lian is this. Silver needle is a tribute tea, each leaf plucked individually from the tree by hand. The weight is so feather light. Even the slightest movement of the water sends each strand swirling in a vortex, down to a point. That is where it is said to be able to pierce the veil, to draw out the fine thread of truth from the mind. I take the first sip, then place the cup in front of him. A challenge.
Do I just drink it? He asks, picking it up gingerly.
I'm reminded of the way he fled after the last time we shared a drink. I nod. Meeting my eyes, he drinks, draining the cup. The magic flares inside me immediately, remembering him. The light in the courtyard shifts, encircling us once again until everything appears lit with a silver tinge. I can hear the strumming of the pipa, the sweet sound of the singer's voice drifting over the jade river. Time for me to ask, and time for him to answer.
Chapter 15. Are you the shadow? The magic works itself into my voice, making it low and breathy, like someone else is speaking through me, as if I am truly calling down the gods. No, he whispers in turn. His features waver, obscured by a sudden mist, and the scent of camellia blossoms settles around us once again. We regard each other, as if on either side of a waterfall. I lift my hand and his own arm rises too, parting the mist until we touch. I think of the figure in the darkness I sparred with, face obscured by a black mask. The shadow. The silver needle spins in the bottom of the cup, looking for an answer. But it doesn't match. It's not him. Do you wish the princess harm? I ask. Why are you here, Kung? His fingers flutter under my hand at the sound of his name. The mist parts, changes. The palace disappears around me, and the mist shows me a vision. An ornamental bridge. Two children stand above the water, scattering blueberries and wild rice to the koi below. One is Kong and the other is the princess. They laugh, joined in companionship and a warm familiarity. The mist sweeps in again, obscuring the memory, replacing it with another. The princess steps forward, her face scrubbed of makeup, her hair devoid of ornamentation. Younger than the regal beauty who presided over the ceremonies. They're in a garden, her garden. He remembers. The branches rustle overhead, spring buds only just beginning to emerge. He notices the soldiers standing guard. He is reminded. Someone is always watching.
Why are you here, Kong?
Her voice is sharp, accusatory. I had hoped we would meet again under better circumstances, he says. Share a drink with me then, so I can thank the person who saved my life. The corner of her lips quirks up, and he knows she is mocking him. Before her, a tray holds a pot and cups. It was simply my duty, princess.
Are you refusing an order?
Her bodyguard asks brusquely, stepping out from her place under the tree. Hand on the hilt of her sword. Her white outfit contrasts with the warmth of her tan skin, bringing out the golden hue. Even in this private garden, she wears an armored chest plate, ready to defend the princess against any threat.
No, he sighs. Hello, Ru Yi.
The handmaiden inclines her head in acknowledgement, but her hand still remains on her sword.
I am simply not worthy.
He bows and sits down in front of the princess. My guards say it was like you flew down from the skies to protect me from the assassin's arrows. With one hand drawing her sleeve back, the princess places a scoop of tea leaves into a pot. The hot water swells and spills over onto the marble tray. They were ready to cut you down if you were a threat, she says lightly, as if she was speaking of someone else.
My loyalty is to the emperor. He protests. I owe him my life, cousin.
My stomach constricts for him. She wants him to break. With a tilt of the wrist, she pours the water. The light catches the stream in a beautiful arc, filling two cups. She nudges one of the cups in his direction. He does not move. You will not drink? She asks, an edge to her voice. A deadly question. I will not drink before you, Highness. He inclines his head, keeping his voice cool. I'm impressed by his restraint, by the way he allows nothing to show, even though I can feel the turmoil inside him, something I am incapable of hiding myself. The surface of the cup shimmers before him. No magic, but a different sort of weapon. You speak of loyalty to my father. She smiles, but it's more like a baring of teeth. Do you think I would give you poison? Before I drink, I ask that you hear my own request. He bows his head. And then my life will be in your hands.
How dare you?
Ru Yi steps forward, outraged, but the princess waves her back. You use words like duty and loyalty, the princess says. Each word intended to wound. And yet you forget where you come from. I remember my place, he concedes. I only wish to speak with my uncle. Anything you wish to say to my father, you can say to me. Cousin. The last word uttered as a distasteful reminder of his family's lineage. I only wish to ask him to reconsider our exile, he keeps speaking, undeterred by her warning. And to reassure him of our loyalty. These are dangerous times. With the unrest at the borders, the bandits, the threat of the northern clans, he can rely on us, for we are family.
Family.
The princess runs her finger over the edge of her cup. My own family will not drink something poured by my hand. With one swift movement, he lifts the cup to his lips and drains it, then salutes her. He sets it down on the stone with a forceful clatter, betraying his impatience.
Is that enough?
he asks.
Now will you allow me to speak with him?
She leaps across the table, a flash of steel in her hand. The point of a dagger presses against his throat, but he does not flinch. He sits with his hands resting on the table, waiting.
I will remind you that you are banished, told never to return to Jia under threat of death.
The knife point trails downward to rest over his heart, where the red seal sits, branding him as traitor.
It is a matter of life and death, princess, he says, sitting utterly still.
Whose life? The princess asks. And whose death? Kong's hand jerks away from mine, the vision dissipating into nothing. The magic releases us from its grasp, loosening the connection between my mind and his. I did not merely listen to their conversation. I'd felt every motion, as if I were inside his body. He does not mean her any harm. It is his own life that is in danger. We are back in the twilight of the courtyard on either side of the stone table. There is anguish in his expression, and I can still